All lines are now bridged.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Conditions and Maintenance of Certification Task Force. We'll get started with a brief roll call. Denise Webb?
Present.
Raj Ratwani, I don't believe is on yet. Carolyn Peterson?
I'm here.
Dan Palmoto?
Good morning.
Sasha Termot?
Present.
Les Leonard? I don't think so. And John Travis?
Yes.
Okay, then Denise, I guess I will hand over to you to get us started.
All right. Good morning, everyone. So we're going to continue from just about from where we left off yesterday to finish going through the recommendations in our transmittal letter for the conditions and maintenance of certification charges. Before we begin on recommendation 25, I just want to make sure everyone, especially Ken, because he actually originally put forth this recommendation 21. I actually flipped the order of the Ken. Hello?
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 That was weird.
Hello? Okay. So is everybody still on? I just heard a telephone ringing.
Yep.
Okay. So I flipped the order of the sentence because the way it read, I kept tripping over whether we want ONC to work with these other agencies on compliance, such as HIPAA. I think what we want to say is we want to have them work on the current uses of the fire APIs, such as Smart on Fire applications or CDS hook services, with respect to compliance with relevant privacy and security regulations. Was I correct in that interpretation when I flipped this content?
It looks good to me.
Okay. Yeah, because I tripped over it several times when I read it, and I just said something's not structurally right about this sentence. Okay, good. And then you'll notice below, Carolyn, thank you for looking up the information on the API task force. I actually found the page that had the comments and recommendations, and it was actually a joint task force. They might have had working groups, but it was a joint task force that issued the recommendations to the Policy and Standards Committee, the previous one. So I put that link in there. Is everyone good with that?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So I just wanted to back up to 21 because I had made some changes. On all the other recommendations, I went, as I said in the email, and just accepted all of our revisions so you would have a clean read. Did anybody have anything before we go on with 25? I know sometimes when we accept revisions, things might happen. And I'll just assume you all read it and are good with it if I don't hear anything. So why don't we start with 25? Do we have Les on? Yes.
I don't think so. I'll shoot him a
message. Okay, so if you can shoot him a message, Lauren, what we'll do is we'll hold on 25 and see if he joins us, and then we'll come back to it.
Okay.
So that takes us to 26. So I had added added a highlight there. And did we intentionally want to change collected and retained? Because let's see, where's my comment? I think in the actual document, it is, you see my comment there? I was going to open up. Hold on a second here. Should have printed these off. I think it's not collected and retained. Isn't it managed? Sasha, do you see my comment there? If you just hover over my highlight, I think I have a comment.
I'm just seeing highlight.
Huh. Ah. And
but we can look up the text in the rule.
Yeah, I'll pull open that page. How we lost those I think I had the experience you had, Kate, where you put comments in and then they disappeared.
Yeah.
It must have something to do with the versioning. I don't know. Unless it's in the... Scroll down a little bit and look at the second highlight there. Is there a comment under that? On the right side?
Not seeing any.
Doesn't look. Oh, no. No, I guess not. That's very odd.
I think the language is produced and electronically managed.
Yes, there you go. Thank you. You got there. I was trying to find my page here on that one. I don't have marked. So my question for the team is that what we want them to change it to, collected and retained?
I think the concept of retention is important because we talked about the challenge of things that like live in other places. You know, if you have, for example, a document management system that stores things, they might be linked in the electronic health record, but they're not really, they're not retained in the electronic health record. And it would be infeasible for the developer of the electronic health record to export data that's really in a different product and a different system.
Right. And I think the retained was good.
Collected seems.
Collected versus produced. I don't understand what they mean by produce. We considered alternative language to produce and which would encompass more data. So what we're saying is we don't agree with the produce, because produce would mean all of those other systems, because if you produce data and then store it someplace else using the EHR data as your source.
Yeah, I mean, produce has that challenge. You could produce a CCDA XML document from the EHR, transmit it to an HIE, but no longer have any ability to control what the HIE does with that XML.
Yeah, well, then the producer wouldn't be retaining the data.
Right, the retention.
Okay, I just wanted to highlight this. I wanted to make sure this is what we really intend. So we can take that highlight out of there and just reject the highlight. So we remove that. And then my other comment that was in here that disappeared is the suggestion that we think about reordering this information so we can consolidate what is our overall recommendation. And what's the discussion? And then at the end, my last highlight had to do with what are we referring back to when we say original proposed recommendation? So we have an alternate proposal. Is it really an alternative proposal or an alternative recommendation, this last paragraph?
I guess it's a different way to approach the same problem. I think if I recall correctly, in the first review of our meeting at HITAC, Arian Malik raised the question about, is legal medical record a defined term with a consistent meaning? And there was concern that it is not necessarily. There's the designated record set under HIPAA But there's a degree of interpretation that each healthcare system puts into what they consider their legal medical record. And so Arian was worried about introducing a recommendation that referenced a term that didn't have a clear definition. We talked about an alternative being that the developer could just explain, like, what electronic health information is held, or maybe we would use the word retained if we use that above, by their certified health IT module, include that in the export documentation they're already required to provide, and then the description could also have the flexibility in the discussion to exclude things that would not be considered part of a legal medical record. So I guess it's sort of like you could describe, in some sense, the pertinent legal medical record elements. I feel that this proposal also has a lot of inelegance to it. I'm not sure it really fully addresses Arian's concern, because it's similarly, I guess, dependent on a number of things that would be interpretive. But that was kind of the background. I guess the original proposed recommendation would have been what we had taken to the high tech back in March, I think.
Right. So I am recalling that discussion that was in, I believe it was in March, where he challenged this term. So what if we, just a thought, what if we did not use the term legal medical record in here and then combine the thought of this alternative up above in our recommendation to say something like, and apply only to the EHI that we would take that out and then say that that the developers would have to provide in plain language definition of EHI held by their certified health IT module and to use that as part of their export documentation. And that the export should not, and we should say what it should not include, like research data. And then don't we get out of that conundrum of having the term legal medical record in there? So
yeah,
basically,
I'm not sure if we
incorporate the alternative.
I think we had a subset of the things that we thought should not be included, but I don't know that we had a comprehensive list. We always were sort of saying, like, what should not be included in the export? Well, the stuff that's not in the legal medical record. But we never made, like, a full and comprehensive list of what those things would be. It would be, you know, incomplete information, research information. It could also be items that...
the law prevents.
Right,
like
exactly. Communications between providers that are not part of the legal medical record. All of those different pieces, I feel like, were sort of part of our conversation, but we never came up, and I think this is the fundamental challenge. The only way we've been able to describe those as things that are not part of the legal medical record. So I think the alternative fails because it still really relies on this concept of legal medical record from a definitional perspective.
I think what is key is that that's a concept that's defined by policy and there's not a widespread. So here, I agree with Sasha, certainly in the following, you practically are going to have to enable some concrete definition of the exportability of EHI that recognizes that an individual data holder is going to reach a definition of that for themselves. That fits their policy understanding of what is a complete medical record, if you will. Terms are troubling, but from a certification standpoint, we're enabling a particular set of data. I mean, it's not vague to the vendor seeking certification about what they'll enable export of. It certainly is variable in any given instance. So I think the key to the process is it's something that can be flexible as it's actually used to support a given instance of requirement. And so that's where that gets resolved. Now, that may also include some, as a practical matter, tailoring of the export to fit the purpose. I may not need to export everything. It's not going to be a uniform thing each and every time. Inevitably, there's going to be adjustment of what is the content of it and the form of it, and you know, potentially that can add or take away from what is normally enabled for export. I think the key here is developers are going to have to provide a plain language statement. So the first sentence is absolutely right to me. That's very important. And I think we have to take a stance for purposes of demonstrating this capability in whatever manner we do for certification to state what it does not include. So ONC has made some proposals in there, and I think we simply want the flexibility to be able to say things that it does not include, and we've got an example list, and we don't have to be exactly precise about it. This is written from the perspective of the HIT developer saying for themselves, this is what EHI means to our certified module and what we enable to be exported as our jacks to open position, to be honest.
So because you could actually enable more to export. So let's say a health system has a policy, and that policy they have to have in place because of local laws about
right.
What can be exported, that they would have the ability to exclude that from a technical perspective, per se. As you note here, there are certain things that the developer would consider not appropriate to export and would document that, such as an incomplete note or research information. But what we want to avoid is the healthcare provider that sets a policy that actually ends up being information blocking rather than being a policy to comply with a particular law. And when we say there's variability in what a health system or a healthcare provider defines as their legal medical record, that variability, I would hope, would be because of legal reasons and not because of they're trying to information block or keep.
And as a matter of fact, I think that the way the exception conditions are defined, we're kind of expanding on what the EHI export is about. So I want to take a little bit of care. It still is fundamentally about what the problem here is for an HIT developer to make a statement that is informative and guiding as to what is the EHI held by their certified module that they represent is enabled to be exported. And that, I think we have to kind of confine ourselves there. The other stuff is absolutely true, but it's a function of any given effort to port data from any given EHR to another EHR to make the data available to the patient. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because they haven't written this with any tight definition, you kind of have to come up with one that serves as a pragmatic functional scope. And they could have said it's the US CDI. They didn't. They left it like this, so we still kind of have to.
Because the US CDI is being handled is the scope of the API.
Right, and I'm not making an argument. I only use that as an example that they didn't give any real pragmatic definition of it. I mean, they give a bunch of they give a general definition and then some for instances of stuff that's not in it. You know, even so.
Okay. So, John.
Yeah.
So one thing I do want to tell you and the rest of the group is that, so Sasha and I are on the information blocking task force, and where the task force is landing on the recommendations for definitions, two definitions. One, is around health IT developer, and we're going to be recommending that be not just those who have the certified technology one or more products. And the second is around EHI, and EHI is very broadly defined. And I think it is, I mean, at least my interpretation, that the proposed rule is expecting that if a provider wants to move from one vendor's platform to another's, that vendor is going to be required to support getting that data moved, even if the modules are not certified. And I think what we're saying here in this recommendation, that for the certification portion of this, we're saying that the certification should only apply and be tested for those portions of EHI that are retained in certified technology.
Yes.
That does not relieve the vendor from working with the healthcare provider to get the rest of the information out that may be required to be given to the patient or for the healthcare provider to move to a different platform, and that if that is not accommodated, that would fall under
information block. Yeah, and I appreciate and agree with that, and actually the information blocking provisions are where that greater discussion comes into play. It's a bit putative because the information blocking regime is set up to enable those conversions to happen without stipulating that they must happen until somebody asks for them to happen. Whereas here, this is a certification requirement. It is a requirement of CHIT vendors, developers, and really I'm trying to get this defined so that it is something we could go and operate and respond to in a manner that can be tested under certification as a criterion as it is, and accorded to and complied to as a condition of certification as it is. And I realize there is a significant permeable membrane between conditions of certification and information blocking, because the rest of it opens up because you are a vendor of certified HIT. Although I realize the way the HIT developer provisions may come about, but my understanding of them is in essence, if you're subject to this rule as a vendor of certified HIT and everything else you do is also subject to it, whether or not certified, but the root of it still is that you're a vendor of, you start out and are exposed to this rule because you are a vendor of certified HIT.
So what if we put in here as part of our discussion that we discussed and acknowledged that depending on the final definition of health IT developer, regardless of what the scope of EHI data is for the certification piece, that those who meet the definition of health IT developer will be accountable to support export, whether the export function is certified or not, for a patient request for their data in the products, the health IT products of the health IT developer, or for the provider to move to a different platform.
I would recommend a simpler expression, that we acknowledge that other considerations for non-certified HIT and for other, I'm really just trying to say we acknowledge there's greater circumstances here that accrue to information blocking. I don't know that we need to say a lot more about it in here.
It
can be whatever it is.
It seems to me to acknowledge that
we have, and I guess I'm kind of live editing here, and we can reject this if necessary, but this piece seems like the recommendation that lost my edit and copy paste. The recommendation is that there should be clarity, and we propose this EHI collected and retained apply only to the part of the legal medical record, and that developers could provide that definition in their materials. And then the rest of this seems like discussion, which I condensed into a shorter phrase by moving some of it up and taking some of it out since it seemed duplicative. But the reasoning for why we proposed this had to do with research, half-finished notes, other considerations around legal medical record. I think the concern that we had before about where the legal medical record might not be, might be broader than a particular product scope is addressed by the phrase we have limited to EHI collected and retained by that technology.
Yeah.
So I don't think we need that sentence anymore, which is why I cut it.
So do we really even need to say legal medical record? So
no,
so
I don't think we
were silent on that, that we thought about having this apply only to EHI that is part of the legal medical record, rather than have that in our recommendation and put a period before that and take that out. And
well,
then,
how would you distinguish the research data then, Denise? Because if a patient is on a placebo med for a research study, that would still be electronic health information collected and retained by certified EHR technology. If we put a period there, it seems like the export still has to include the placebo med.
So are you saying that the placebo – so what I'm hearing you say, Sasha, is there is a definition of legal medical record. What is the definition?
The challenging part is that the definition varies by healthcare organization. So each organization applies a degree of interpretation as to what they think constitutes legal medical record based on the designated record set from HIPAA.
So how do you as a developer accommodate that?
With a lot of configuration options.
Okay. All right. And that's just assumed here? That...
Well, I think that's one of the challenges of this, which is that this presupposes that those same configuration options would be available for this export. The feasibility of that is questionable. The feasibility of the export overall is also challenging. I guess, so I don't want to imply that that is super practical from a development perspective. Certainly having something that's not standardized in that way is very challenging.
Mm-hmm. Well, the research data, as far as exporting that to move to a different platform, wouldn't be an issue. It's if you're going to give it to the patient.
Yes. The research piece for platform changes would not be a problem. The half-finished note for platform changes would not be a problem. Those are challenges for the export to patient piece.
Right, right. I think it's going to be, you know, as I consider and having been in development, it's going to be very complex to deal with the use case for the patient export.
I agree.
Yeah. And it does say it doesn't have to be real time. The API piece does, but which that has a defined set of data elements where this does not.
Well, and corresponding things aren't in real time either. You know, if you request your download from Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn, they start to queue it up behind the scenes and then tell you when it's ready to download. And I think this will be similar for people who have large quantities of data in their electronic health record. It's going to potentially take hours, days to, you know, run a query, gather all of their data together, format it into a way that can be downloaded or exported, and then make it available to the patient.
Yeah, and there may need to be some sort of data mining capability or something that the data provider would have to do to scan the data to make sure nothing appears in the data that is part of research. Because I don't know, I just think this is going to be very difficult for the developers to guarantee that.
We had a different recommendation about manual review, right?
Yeah, we did.
Where is it?
So I think it's right after this.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's right at. We haven't gotten to it yet.
Right. Okay.
Do we want to be stronger about, instead of saying developers could, don't we want them to do that in terms of the documentation? And others, Carolyn, jump in. And I think, Ken, you're just on the phone, right?
No, I'm on the WebEx, too, or the Adobe.
Oh, okay. I just didn't see your name. I didn't know if you were seeing this. So Carolyn and Ken, you haven't had a chance to say anything. Do you have any particular thoughts on this?
I'm squinting to read it in the light blue type on the white background. I can tell you I certainly don't have any additional light to shed on the legal medical record definition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think should provide is on the first sentence. I think that should provide plain language definitions of things.
Yeah, I like that. I was going to make a suggestion maybe it'll help us get a little less stuck. That in that prior sentence to the blue text, we say apply only to the EHI that is commonly understood to be part of the legal medical record. There is a subjectivity to it in that it's jurisdictional and it will vary. The task to the EHR developer is to try to provide the best plain statement that they can of what the EHI is that their product holds. And for certification purposes, again, I kind of return to that. That's going to be a kind of a working statement. It's a good faith effort to try to provide a full definition that I got to believe most everybody's going to try to work towards. It isn't going to be the same for vendor to vendor for a whole variety of reasons, but it's a responsibility to try to make a good faith effort to make a full statement of that then is the basis of the conversation for any given instance of actual use. If there is to be additional conversation or you're going to accept that as it's what you would accept as a known starting point or an end state if you only relied on the vendor statement as the user, or it's going to be the starting point of a discussion to scope it to be more or less than that. And yeah, I think it possibly could be more. And that isn't something you lose your head over if you're a regulator. You know, we'll do our best to try to define it. And it certainly could expand the future because the form of HIT does more stuff and holds more data. That can happen. So, you know, the USCDI is going to expand and we might determine that we do something in response to a new data type that we hadn't thought about before. So I think the less prescriptive you are on that, you have to still put it on the vendor to try to provide a good faith statement of what it is that informs other conversations.
So I don't know if any of you all have been following the discussions at the Karen Alliance's technology work group, but they're actually, I think, going to be proposing that this EHI export can export everything via an API, which is the way I guess it could be done. But there's going to be some interesting comments coming out of that group related to
EHI. Yeah, I have been actually. And I think they're trying to go, their main aim is to make this as standards-based as possible so it's not so dependent on proprietary means, which is going to be the reality out the chute.
Right. So one small change, Sasha, if we could put help IT developers so that we use the terminology that they're using. And then, yeah. And do we want to be stronger here and say that the CMC task force further recommends that the health IT developers be required to provide? I mean, do you really want to leave it to should?
I'm fine with required.
No. Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. Okay, so the only last thing I want to note for my you know, just from our previous discussion about all the other data that doesn't exist in certified health IT yet is provided in modules that are offered by the certified health IT developer. Do we just want to be silent on that? I mean, I just worry about the full committee. I think they need to know that we recognize that and discuss that.
Yeah.
Or
I think it's a simple acknowledgement.
Yeah. Yeah, under the discussion.
I think it's a simple acknowledgement that doesn't have to get real elaborate. You know, we're very aware that there is a broader set of requirements that apply to the information blocking provisions for non-certified HIT, something like that. We're not reaching a conclusion about it. It wasn't within our scope. We know it's going on, and we're aware of it.
I don't know if that language is.
I can work on that, and then when we send it out,
yeah, that's the right spot.
You guys can accept it.
Yeah, what's interesting talking to Sasha and I is that we're in for a penny and in for a pound on this, so
well, you know that. Okay. So Carolyn and Ken, and I know we don't have Raj yet, but they'll be able to look at this if they don't get on, and then Les. Les is still not on.
No, we don't have him yet.
Okay.
This is fine with me. This is
all right.
Fine.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's quickly go through the rest of the recommendations. I think those will be real quick, and it's really 25 that we're going to have to come back to. recommendation 27. I added the preamble section. Any concerns with any of the rest of that? This is the one you were talking about, Sasha, about complying with state laws.
Yep. I'm glad it's still in there.
Recommendation 28. I just added some terms in here just to clarify what we were talking about.
That looks good.
Yeah.
All right. And
verify. Why? Sorry, I missed it. Why audit log data? It's very large.
Because Ken, if there was an investigation, so let's say a health system is going to transition from one platform to another platform. They would need to bring their audit log data with them because, at least for a period of time, because of investigations into particular matters concerning HIPAA or coding, reimbursement.
I wonder if we something like appropriate audit log data. Or I'm just thinking. Specifically with, you know, when I've looked at our log data, it is almost indecipherable and it's massive. It's not as simple as this person looked at this person's record at this time. It's the content of the audit log is huge. So I'm just worried it could be just, I don't know. I mean.
Well, the health system can say I don't want the whole thing.
Right. And it might depend on its nature, too. So if the audit log is stored in a distinct database or something like that, that might persist beyond the transition of systems and continue to be usable. That's one thing. If it's available in no other form, I think it's probably more what the burden of the provider is to make sure they're meeting record-keeping requirements and are able to continue to be able to access audit trails for purposes of investigation downstream if they don't convert it. But this is a capability we're speaking of here, not a implementation requirement.
Right. I mean, as part of implementation, the health system can say that I don't want all of that. So do you want, I mean, do you think it's necessary to put that appropriate? I mean, then what's appropriate? We have to define appropriate.
Yeah, or, you know, legally required. Well, I mean, if the HR vendors are okay with it, but I mean, when I've looked at our stuff, it almost seems like you need to have a PhD in audit log analysis to, like, actually understand it. I mean, it gets down into the very detailed level.
That's true of it as it is, though, isn't it, Ken? If you need it to know how to export it, you need it to be able to just use it as it is, and so that's not really a problem accruing to the ability to export it. That's a problem of it containing a lot of unneeded information.
I'm okay if the, in particular, folks who are on the HR vendor side thinks it's fine. I'm okay with it.
I think exporting audit log data is very straightforward. It's already a very clearly defined and organized data set. It is very large. So as Ken points out, there could be hardware storage considerations. But if a provider is transitioning systems, they would have to determine, like, do we want to preserve this after we've exported it? Or if it's not worth the hardware storage because they have other ways to meet their legal obligations, you know, it would be up to them to delete it.
Okay. We have 14 minutes, and we do have to go to public comment in a few minutes. So recommendation 29, I just added the preamble section.
I added a comma for clarity, but...
Thank you. Okay. 30. Here what we're asking for will impact the final regulatory text, and I put the text, citing there, and then the preamble would have to be updated. Otherwise, I don't think.
Is it more clear, Denise, to move this to here?
Oh, okay, yep. Thank you. All right, and then if you'll scroll down a little bit, please. Okay, that's it for that. So that's no other change there. And then on quality, we also... out of the site. All right. And then recommendation 32. I actually took the verbatim text from the proposed rule on what ONC was asking us to comment on. Our comment here really didn't change. I just added some clarification around it.
Seems okay.
Carolyn, you okay with that? John? Ken?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then I just put transparency in the heading section there to match what's in the reg. Let's see. Recommendation 33, I added the preamble. And 34, asking them to add a text box, they would need to modify the final rule regulatory text and the preamble. Because right now the regulatory text just says yes, no attestation. I noted we had no recommendations for the modification charge, just so they know nothing's missing there. And then deregulatory, again, added the site. And that brings us to the end. Let's go to public comment, and then let's back up to recommendation 25 and see if we all can work out, since Les didn't join us, if we can work out what we're going to do with that.
Okay. Operator, can we open the public line? Operator, are you able to open the public line?
Yes. If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And do we have any comments in the queue?
There are no comments at this time.
Okay. All right, Denise, we've got 9 or 10 minutes left.
Okay, let's back up to 25. So the proposed rule asked us to consider whether the conditions and maintenance of certification requirements apply to self-developers. And under the information blocking section, there it does talk about self-developers principally being healthcare providers. I was going to find the page where it defined that. You know, I think we're all in agreement, and we were to entertain the CMC that we're looking at. The Information Blocking Task Force looked at information blocking assurances and communication and put forth that the CMC does apply to self-developers or should apply to self-developers, except with one exception related to communications, where a developer could prevent their employees from speaking about the products, but where it's a self-developer, which is presumed to be a health care provider or health system, they would not be able to prevent the users of their self-developed product within their company from speaking about the usability of the software. I think we generally agreed as a task force that the conditions and maintenance of certification requirements for real-world testing, API, and attestations would also apply to self-developers. So for that matter, all developers, as defined in the regulation. But then we go into these 1 through 4, and that's where I start having a problem with what we have here, because there's a lack of clarity. And if you, like on number 2, if you take out or provide, we're saying maintain burden or provide for moderation of burden. So I don't think we want to say we want to maintain burden to self-developers seeking certification. I'm wondering if we put our recommendation forth and then have some discussion items. Because, you know, coming from an organization that did self-development and developed their own EHR, practice management, revenue cycle management, LIS, RIS, to the extent that any of those products are certified and have interoperability components, I don't see a difference. And we didn't see it differently. We needed to meet the same requirements that the commercial vendors met, so when it came to these things. So the way we can handle this, we could just say we recommend these all apply to self-developers, all developers, and be silent on the rest of this. One of the changes, I sent this to you all in an email, number four, LESS wanted to propose that we have substantial disagreements among its members and no consensus, and I don't necessarily agree that that's correct. I think we generally agree that these conditions should apply if a self-developer is going to have certified technology.
The only qualification, a general statement is probably fine. The only qualification would be what you mentioned about those that don't apply to you if you're not engaged in commercial sale of the certified product. You know, the gag clause provision, maybe some of the things regarding fees for API.
Well, we went through those, John, didn't we? And they wouldn't, if they didn't apply, they were not problematic, right?
Right.
Because we did go talk through each one, and I agree. Conceptually, some of them might not be applicable, but it didn't matter. Like, if you're not involved in it commercially, then provisions about pricing wouldn't matter. And if they decided to commercialize
right.
their product,
do you
at
need
some point,
to say that? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, at most, I think a general statement would be fine. And if there is any qualification on that that isn't self evident in the way that, as Sasha pointed out, that would be the only thing I could think of. And as
right.
you say, that may
well,
not be necessarily self evident.
Well, and the other thing I know Les was concerned about coming from an academic institution is the stifling innovation if self developers had to meet the CMC. But the CMC is for products that they have certified.
Right. And I think he was thinking beyond
and
that.
And they're already subject to information blocking because most self-developers, as acknowledged by ONC in the proposed rule, are, and I'll read it to you. Last, we clarify that a self-developer of certified health IT, as the term has been used in this program and described in this rulemaking, and previous rulemaking would be treated as a healthcare provider for the purposes of information blocking. So, I think all we're talking about here is conditions of certification and maintenance of that certification for those products which they get certified. They may not
right.
get anything certified. So in the last organization I was in, we were certified to the 2014 edition, which now goes away. But they did not further certify their products, which creates a different set of issues for them. But this, I don't think it's necessary to say all of these things.
Yeah. No, I think he was concerned about, and this may not be the example he had in mind, but, you know, I go build my own application that heretofore has kind of been able to stand in isolation. It's a tumor registry that I maintain, or it's some kind of, you know, internal application that is used by one of the NSAR areas or departments of a academic facility. You know, I get it. If you really face the issue that these requirements intruded into that, the information blocking provisions for you as a healthcare provider are what you have to deal with, regardless of whether or not you develop anything. And that's where your burden, so to speak, goes in terms of compliance requirements for you as a healthcare provider. What Sasha and I were particularly wanting to maintain the focus on was, if you're representing this to be a certified product, it's qualifying you for federal programs and for penalty avoidance and for incentives, and you're making the same representations as a vendor of commercial software would, and for you to be held to a different level of standard in terms of the things that truly matter to the certified capability, that should not be an unlevel playing field. So,
I absolutely agree. I came from an organization that exclusively had developed products that were certified. So is that Les that just rang in?
It is. I'm sorry I was delayed.
So Les, we're at the end of the call. We're at the end of the call, and what we're proposing is to remove, or at least I'm proposing we remove everything after on recommendation 25 in particular, and remove the four items and just state that the task force agrees that the conditions of certification and maintenance do apply to all developers, including self-developers. And this would only apply to self-developers who chose to certify something they've developed. It would not prevent them from doing innovative things, because at my last job, we did all kinds of innovative things and had a research institute. And it does not preclude that they wouldn't be subject to information blocking, regardless of whether we agreed CMC applies, because on page 338, ONC defines self-developer that they would be treated as a healthcare provider for the purposes of information blocking. Could you live with that if we removed 1 through 4, you and the rest of the members of the task force?
See, you're getting my whole point. Mm-hmm. Which is, I think that, so the question really is as far as conditions of maintenance of certification as applies to a healthcare organization, if an organization develops a non-certified module that and fields it in their healthcare setting, does the organization lose its certification, its maintenance of certification? And you're saying that if they do that, that is the consequence of fielding a non-certified module. And my
we fielded non-certified modules all the time. We did a thing called Image Locker that wasn't certified. Didn't prevent us from doing that.
I don't think a non-certified module would have any impact on the conditions of certification.
Yeah, I mean, is that the point? Is that to self-developers, if a non-certified module wouldn't have any impact on maintenance of certification? Okay. Well,
no, because this is maintenance of certification of their certified products. So it's the original certification requirements, conditions of getting a certification for your module, and then the maintenance of the certification for that certified module. And I don't know, Lauren, if it's okay to go over a few minutes, because this is the only recommendation preventing us from finishing the transmittal letter.
Yeah, no, that's fine. We can continue.
Would it be helpful
Les,
to put a clarification that...
Go ahead, Sasha. Sorry.
I was just going to say, it seems like we have a clarification that these conditions and maintenance of certification would apply to all developers of certified health IT, including self-developers. I think the concern that Les has is about developers of uncertified health IT, which would be out of scope.
Right. And I don't know, maybe we could stay here, because I want to be respectful of your concerns, Les, and make sure that this addresses what you're worried about. We could say that these requirements apply to these developers and their certified products.
Yeah, if you limit it to certified products, I think that that's, you know, to maintain...
And then, yeah.
Including self-developers of certified products.
I think it's more
all developers.
If we say and their whether they're a self-developer or a regular developer, and their certified products, because if it's not a certified product, API doesn't apply. attestations doesn't apply. And real-world testing doesn't apply, because if it's not a certified interoperability product, you're not subject to the real-world testing. Am I interpreting that correctly, Kate and Lauren, that the CMC applies to the certification program and products which you get certified?
Does it apply to the organization?
I mean, some of them do apply to the organization, right? Like the conditions of the communication provisions are about the organization and the limitations they place on communication, not about a specific product.
Oh, okay. That's a good point. So we're only talking about three of the conditions. So what we could say here, including self-developers and their certified products for the CMC of real-world testing, API, and attestation. Because that's the scope of the other information, of the information blocking task force.
Okay, so for real-world testing, APIs, and what was the third one?
Attestation.
Because you're right. The other work group had that other one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could be happy with that.
Okay.
And then where the proposal is to take this out.
Yeah. And do we want to say, and their certified products? So it applies not just to the organization for these three CMC. Health IT module is the term I believe they use.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the issue is that even if it's a self-developer, you've certified it for a purpose, right, which would be to distribute it, potentially?
Mm-hmm.
No, the purpose of certification would be to participate in federal programs, probably.
Yeah, that's why we did it in my last job, just so we could meet the EHR incentive program requirements or get a penalty as a healthcare provider. So would everybody be willing to endorse this as written now?
I still have my concerns that this will limit innovation.
I'm giving you real world experience where it didn't limit, and in fact, in my last organization, they are going forth with modules that are not certified, that integrate and work with certified technology, and they're not subject to any of these requirements for that module. We worked with Drummond. I have personal experience with this.
It would be interesting to know what is stifling about it if you're not intending to seek certification. If you are, I think you're on a level playing field for the fact that you're seeking certification, and that holds very significant meaning for your organization to qualify for federal programs and incentives on par with any other certified product. So you get dealt with the same as to what those requirements are. But putting all that aside, you're subject as a provider to information blocking provisions, which remain anyway. So I think,
You might be concerned that the information blocking provisions would more stifle innovation.
Yeah.
And
there may be a very legitimate statement there. You know, the example I used earlier, if you built something that was very much for your own use, you didn't think about the need to have to provide information to someone who sought access to it, because you built it as fundamentally an internal use application to support research or to support, a program function. Maybe you build it to be a utilization management capability for looking at a particular line of service, where you used it to support your own internal activities that you never gave a thought to somebody approaching you externally for access to that information necessarily, the information blocking provisions would hit you. And my point is, I think that would create additional consideration that wouldn't have been there before, and now you have to be concerned about it. But you're not,
John, let me jump in and suggest to Les that based on what you just described, Les, I think the area that you might need to be concerned about, and as a member of the committee, you can raise this, is around the definition of EHI. That is going to directly intersect with development, self-development that's done by a health system or a healthcare provider, an academic institution, a health institution. Because EHI has a pretty broad definition, and if information that's in the tumor registry is used to make decisions about the past, present, and future care of a patient, that fits under the EHI definition and would be subject to information blocking if you didn't provide the information if the patient requested it and was legally had legal authority to have the information. So if there weren't any state or local laws or federal laws preventing you from or allowing you to meet one of the exceptions of information blocking, you would have to provide that information to the patient. So I think that's what John's trying to say. And so maybe the proper place to elevate the concern is around the definitions and not whether the CMC is the culprit for stifling innovation. Are you still there, Les?
I'm still there. I'm just thinking about what, you know, again, that how to capture this. I mean, my view is still remains that, the issue is, so, I guess, down to a certified module that is self-developed. Or, you know, when someone develops a module that is intended to interface with a federal program, it has to be certified, and that the path for that is the same as a commercial product, even if it's self-developed, which would pretty much undercut any kind of incentive to do the self-development. I mean, it would, because of the cost of certification to a commercial standard. So I'm still feeling the conundrum here that if you require self-developers to work at the level of certifying something for a national distribution of a product to participate in a federal program, this is going to put undue barriers in front of self-developers.
Well, I think having come from a health system and also having worked with, I'll give an example, the chief digital officer at St. Providence Health, St. Joseph's, what a number of us have done is we look to our commercial EHR to solve problems. And then if the commercial EHR can't solve the problem, then we look at, is there an extension or something that exists in the commercial market that we can put on top? And if not, then we go and self-develop. In the case of Providence Health, they do it totally in partnership with entrepreneurs and so forth. And then if they're going to commercialize something, they actually say our core competency is to provide healthcare, not be a commercial IT vendor, and they have their partner go commercialize it. So, you know, this is the path. The health system I came from is the only health system, I think, large health system remaining that still has its own self-developed EHR that it's using. So where things are available in the commercial market, it doesn't prevent innovation what it does is it says, well, you know, we decided we had one policy person and we couldn't keep up with the federal regulations, and all of these things are available on the commercial market. So I think there's a distinct line between what's innovative and what's features and functions, you know, that exist in the commercial market. And I'll get off my soapbox, but anyway. Do you want us to put a statement in here that there was not consensus on by, and we don't have to name names, by one member of the task force on this recommendation due to concerns about it stifling innovation?
Mm-hmm. I don't think that you've really, I think you've described one path to innovation that was successful potentially sometimes in the organization that you worked in, and that having worked in a broad variety of organizations that in including, you know, public health and other things like that, that I don't think that one path will suffice for all.
So Les, would you like to draft up something to send to all of us to include in this recommendation this evening?
Sure. I mean, you mean it just to say the statement that there wasn't consensus, or do you want me to try to fix it?
Well, I was going to suggest for discussion, like have our recommendation stand here, is because this is not 100% consensus, but the majority of the task force members are in favor of this recommendation. And it is going to have to go to a vote for the whole committee. And certainly you can vote against it. It's not a requirement. There's 100% agreement on every recommendation that we set forth to Carolyn and Robert. So what I guess I'm asking is, we can add a discussion section here, and if you'd like to propose what you'd like to see in the discussion that covers your concerns, so that the full committee is aware. And if you would like to do that, we're going to need that this evening, because we need to send this to the full committee tomorrow afternoon.
Sure. Why don't I come up with one slide that would summarize my concerns? Good.
Okay. And you don't have to send a slide. If you'll just put it in an email to Raj and I.
I think the best thing would probably be to just put it into a PowerPoint slide, and then, you know, we can continue to hash that out. And that, and if you want to use my slide, fine. If not, you know, that's fine too. But I think, you know, I'll just put it into a slide, and that would be the best way to express the things. It may be only half a slide, perhaps.
Okay. So I apologize for us running over. I will go ahead and go through this document and accept the changes and send out a clean version to the entire committee. And if everybody is in agreement, we'll submit it tomorrow afternoon to the full committee, actually to Carolyn and Robert. So if you do have any issues or concerns, we would need to know by noon tomorrow so that we can work through those.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for your contributions. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Denise.
All right. And thank you for keeping track of our notes, Sasha. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Lauren, I'll hop on a quick call with you and Kate.
Sure.
All right, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.